The night may be long and the dark may be deep, but the answers are there to be found. Whether it's the normal, the abnormal, or the paranormal, you're in the right place. Let's go Beyond Reality.
Welcome to the program. It's Beyond Reality Radio. I'm your host, J.V. Johnson. We are in the thick of the throes on the final countdown to Christmas. I hope everybody's got a great holiday plan for themselves. A lot of people will be doing stuff over this coming weekend since Christmas falls on a Wednesday. So whatever you're doing, I hope you're safe, and I hope you're surrounded by friends and family that love you. That's what's most important, and appreciate those folks when you're with them. We have a really interesting show for you tonight. We're going to be talking about winged humanoids. Whenever we start this conversation, we have to preface it by saying that we will be talking about the Mothman. Because I think the Mothman experience and sighting, and or many, many sightings, in fact, and the fact that the whole Mothman story kind of ended with the collapse, with a catastrophe on December 15th, I think it was 1967, so almost to the day, 52 years ago. The Silver Bridge over the Ohio River in Point Pleasant, West Virginia, collapsed while people were rushing home from some holiday shopping. The death toll was in the 50s, I think. Our guest tonight, Lon Strickler, will know all about this and be able to talk to us about it. And some people think the Mothman, those sightings that led up to that event, was actually trying to warn people of an impending disaster. Well, what does that mean if people have been seeing a Mothman-type creature, a winged humanoid, in Chicago recently? Or in other parts of the world where sightings have been reported? Does that mean that we can expect something terrible to happen in those places? It's all part of the story, and it's what we're going to be talking about tonight with our guest. Again, his name is Lon Strickler. He is a Fortean researcher, and he's written about the Mothman. He's also researched these winged humanoid sightings. And we'll also talk about alien disclosure. That's another topic that he's written about. Make sure that you go to YouTube. This is you know how you've got a list of things to do as you get ready for Christmas? I'm sure that list is quite long. I know my list is quite long. Move to the very top of that list, what I'm about to say right now. Go to YouTube, search for JV Johnson. When you find the channel, which is JV Johnson's Beyond Paranormal, subscribe. It's going to be very important in the coming days. We want you to be part of that community. It's a global community. Those numbers are rising. Our subscriber count is rising. Our chat room activity is rising. So we want you to be part of that as well. We're always there when we broadcast live. We stream live. Plus, there's an archive of, gosh, we got to be getting close to 500 episodes now. I got to count those someday. Maybe I'll have Slick Eddie or Orion count those. Can you guys count that? I mean, take a look anyway. Maybe there's just a total there. Maybe it even tells you. And see how many episodes we have. But I know there's a bunch of back episodes there for your enjoyment. And they're all edited up nicely, so they're all about an hour apiece. Makes for a great listen when you're in the car or, hanging out while somebody's watching a Hallmark Christmas movie and you've seen it enough or you don't want to see it at all. It's you put the headphones in, you can listen to it. Either way, go to YouTube, search for JV Johnson, and make sure you subscribe. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll bring our guest in. Again, Lon Strickler tonight on Beyond Reality Radio. Hey, gang, it's JV here. We hope you're enjoying this episode of Beyond Reality Radio. Some of you are new to the program, and some of you have been with us for years. And no matter if you're interested in ghosts, the UFO phenomenon, conspiracy discussions, or any of the other topics we explore on this program, we do it for you. Our goal here is to help find answers to some of the world's most enduring mysteries. And as we continue to bring you interviews and discussions each night, it's important that we get your feedback and, even more importantly, your support. The media landscape is forever changing, and as it does, we need to be able to change with it. That's why it's important for you right now to go to our YouTube channel and subscribe. Once on YouTube, just search for JV Johnson. You'll find it there. Subscribe. It's all free, and it'll make you part of our global community. In addition, Beyond Reality Radio is available as a podcast. Go to your favorite podcast platform and search for Beyond Reality Radio and subscribe there as well. And finally, we have an archive program that you may enjoy as well. This show can be found on major podcast platforms, and it's called Beyond Reality Paranormal. By supporting us in one or all of those places, you can be sure we'll be able to continue to deliver quality shows to you, no matter what form the media landscape takes. As a paranormal historian, I promise you the best and most entertaining conversations as we continue to hunt for the truth. Thanks for being here as we warm up for a pre-Christmas weekend. Christmas is on Wednesday of next week, right in the middle of the week. I hope that means everybody gets a little bit of time off, gets to enjoy friends and family. Our guest tonight, Lon Strickler, is a Fortean researcher, and he's the author of several books, including Alien Disclosure, Experiencers Expose Reality, and Mothman Dynasty, Chicago's Winged Humanoids. He's researched winged humanoids that have been sighted around Chicago and has also researched Alien Disclosure. We're going to be talking about all of that tonight. Lon, welcome to Beyond Reality Radio. Great to have you here.
Thanks for having me on.
So let's talk a little bit about winged humanoids. At what point did you first become interested in this particular topic? When did it show up on your radar, if you will?
Well, I have known about, of course, the Mothman incident in 66 and 67 in Point Pleasant. But I had an encounter back in 1988 of something very similar to what people have been seeing in Chicago. So that's how I kind of got started with man.
So really, this is very personal for you.
In a way it is, because it's been a big question as to what this thing was. And, there had been other sightings in the same general area where I had mine, which was in South Central Pennsylvania. But when these sightings started happening in Chicago, well, the first three sightings were in 2011 in Chicago. And then, there weren't many sightings reported, if any sightings reported. But starting in March of 2017, people started seeing these things all around the city and in the suburbs.
So your encounter, and this kind of jumps ahead of where I wanted to go at this point, but I have to ask this question. Your encounter in South Central Pennsylvania is not super far away from Point Pleasant, West Virginia, is it? It's got to be, six hours maybe? I mean, it can't be too far.
Yeah, it's about 6 to 8 hours away.
Yeah, so it's in the same general geography. And your sighting was in, you said 88?
Yeah, I was in the fall of 1988.
So then that would mean, and of course, if we're talking about sightings in and around Chicago as well, that would mean that these sightings of a Mothman-type creature did not end with the collapse of the Silver Bridge on December 15th, 1967. I mean, it's kind of interesting. I don't know if it's coincidental or our producers had their fingers on the pulse here that we're almost at the anniversary, just a few days off of that anniversary. But a lot of people thought that phenomena kind of ended when that bridge collapsed.
No, not really. There has been a continued rash of reports and sightings of this, what people call the Mothman, up and down the Ohio River Valley into the areas around Point Pleasant. Up until this present day, I have received reports fairly recently. So it was something that, of course, when the bridge did collapse, the Mothman's sightings did coincide with the actual collapse. And then, of course, the Harbinger of Doom theory was kind of put in there as a portent of what happened. But no, the sightings did continue, and they still continue.
Do the sightings measure up to the frequency and intensity of the sightings that were happening around Point Pleasant, West Virginia, during 66 and 67?
Probably more so.
Really? So is it the fact that that story, the Point Pleasant story, ends with a tragedy, make that particular series of incidents stick with us a little more strongly than maybe some of these other sightings?
Well, it wasn't, the Mothman itself wasn't the only phenomena that was going on in around Point Pleasant.
Right.
Of course, there was the Men in Black sightings and incidents, a lot of UFO activity, as well as paranormal activity. And, of course, John Keel wrote the Mothman Prophecies, which kind of detailed some of what was going on back
right.
then. And it stuck with people. And, of course, when these sightings in Chicago started to occur, my team and I were getting calls about from just regular citizens who hadn't had a sighting but were aware of the Silver Bridge collapse connected to the Mothman or a flying humanoid. And we were getting all kinds of phone calls from people 24/7 there for a while, people that were afraid something was going to happen.
I suppose it also doesn't hurt the story when Richard Gere does a movie about it as well. That probably puts it on a lot of people's radar that might not otherwise know what the story's about, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We've got just about 4 minutes here before we have to jump to our bottom of the hour break. But in that time, let's talk a little bit about what people saw in Point Pleasant, because I think it kind of sets the stage for what we're going to be talking about. Describe the Mothman creature for us.
Well, the Mothman itself, the one in from Point Pleasant, was an insectoid-type humanoid. It had the general body of a human, but it had wings like that of a moth. Now, there were several descriptions. Some stated that the arms were attached to wings. Some stated that the arms were detached from the wings. But the wing structure itself was fairly consistent. It was more like that of an actual moth, and the red eyes were quite prominent. It had a short, flat head that was kind of part of the upper body. And this thing actually was not shy about approaching people. It was actually chasing people up and down the road along the West Virginia Ordnance Works, or what people call the TNT plant. And the sightings themselves were even extended out into the county and across the river and into Ohio. So it just wasn't concentrated just into Point Pleasant. But overall, I mean, I've gone back and looked at the reports and, you know, what may have actually been real reports. And I think there was around 30 to 35 in that 1 year period. But then, like I said before, there were other reports beyond that.
I mean, that's a lot of reports for any particular incident.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, some people
have... Yeah, the reports we're getting now, we're up to 99 verified reports.
Wow. Some people kind of describe the Mothman as almost looking owl-like as well. That description was thrown about a bit, too.
Yeah, it has been.
What's your opinion? You know, you've probably seen all of the artist renderings that have been created based on the eyewitness sightings. Do you have an opinion? Which, I mean, you mentioned insectoid. Is that where you think is probably the most accurate?
Well, and when I mean insectoid, I mean like that of a moth, maybe a butterfly, the wing structure-wise. You know, the sightings in Chicago have been much different than that of the actual original Mothman description. Those wings were different. It just happened. The moniker Mothman just kind of got picked up by the press, and they went with it. But what happened? You know, the creature that was seen in around Point Pleasant was anywhere from 5 to 6 foot in height, somewhat full bodied, with legs, human like legs, and the wide wings that probably extended anywhere to 8 to 10 foot. And then, of course, it had the large, red, bright eyes.
Yeah, the eyes were really common throughout all of the descriptions and seemed to be very important in the story.
Yeah, it was.
Do you think that there is a connection between the Mothman and these other sightings that we're talking about and some type of portending of tragedy?
I don't think so. I don't necessarily buy into the Harbinger theory. It, you know, there have been reported or supposedly reported sightings of winged humanoids after several disasters. The only one that really holds any water beyond the Point Pleasant sightings were the Blackbird of Chernobyl, and there were documented sightings of a large black humanoid that were seen above the power plant before the disaster. But, you know, Fukushima in Japan supposedly had these flying humanoids above before. But, you know, there's no real proof of that.
Lon, how long have you been writing about this stuff or following it and particularly putting stuff up on your website for people to follow?
Well, I started the blog in 2005, but I've actually been investigating the paranormal since around 1977.
Oh, wow. Well, that was before it was cool.
It's been over 40 years.
Yeah. So, you know, when we go back to this Mothman story, those sightings started in 66. I think it was late 66, right? And then it continued for about a year, and the collapse of the Silver Bridge was December 67. So as that story kind of wraps up, when did other sightings start to be reported?
Well, there were scattered sightings throughout that part of West Virginia. And in fact, when I started collecting reports myself, I would receive scattered sightings up and down the Ohio River, as far south as Cincinnati and as far north as Wheeling, West Virginia. But, there have been other humanoid sightings, winged humanoid sightings, you know, nationwide as well. But like I said, it was very scattered.
As you got these reports and you investigated them, what was your opinion? There must have been some that you felt were legitimate sightings and others that either were mistaken identity or maybe even hoaxes.
Well, I have thought for many years that the Mothman or whatever this winged humanoid actually is, seemed to me to be a summoned being. Now, when I say summoned being, I believe it was actually summoned by some type of strong spiritual entity of some type. The reason I say that is there are a lot of people that have reported to me some of the encounters they have experienced while investigating the West Virginia ordnance works. And some of the EVPs and some of the activity that has been described to me, and some I have actually heard, kind of makes you think that there's something still there, something very strong energy-wise. And I kind of believe that the original Mothman was some type of sentinel or some type of guard for whatever reason. But I think it was summoned from some other type of, either from an interdimensional world or some type of parallel reality.
Okay, you said a lot there that we need to pick apart a little bit. Do you believe, first of all, have you investigated that area near Point Pleasant, the munitions, what was it, a storage area, I believe?
Yeah, many years ago I had.
You did, and you got some of these EVP yourself?
I had some strange experiences there. The EVPs I've heard have been from other people.
Okay.
But they're quite convincing.
And are they talking about the Mothman? I mean,
no.
They don't reference. No, okay.
I assume from what I have heard, it was some type of very strong spiritual energy.
Okay, so what
I don't know what it was related to, but I do believe it was something related to the indigenous people of that area.
Okay, so what you're saying then is you, based on the evidence that you've seen and heard, you believe there is a significant spiritual presence there, and in this Mothman creature may have been summoned by that spiritual presence as some type of sentinel or guard, if you will, for something, maybe just the land itself.
Yeah, that's basically what it is, what I think it is, yeah.
Okay. So other people that have done investigations in a more traditional paranormal investigation sense, you know, EVP, using the other equipment, the infrareds or whatever it happens to be that people use for paranormal investigations, are those people, were they out to get answers about Mothman when they did these investigations, or were they just doing them, from a more ghost hunting perspective?
The ones I have been familiar with were people who were just in the area, not necessarily to investigate the Mothman, but to investigate some of the paranormal activity.
So if you think there's a spiritual connection from this spiritual activity to the Mothman, does that mean that you think that the Mothman is somehow related to a dark energy, some kind of demonic entity, or something less nefarious?
I think it's more of a protector. It may be a what we call thought form or something that was manifested, but I believe it was more of a protector. And I believe some of these sightings in Chicago may actually be related to that as well. But that's something we haven't been able to figure out as of yet.
So if the Mothman was a protector and it was summoned by this spiritual energy to protect that particular area, why then was it roaming all over the place and being sighted on, it was sighted on the Silver Bridge, if I remember correctly, at one point. Why was it seen in so many different places and not just staying local to that particular area where it was summoned?
Well, that whole area of West Virginia was indigenous to the to the native people, and in fact there were a lot of battles there between tribes and the settlers. And the Shawnee was very, very big part of the Shawnee Nation, and in fact it was related to two very well known Shawnee chiefs, Chief Cornstalk and Tecumseh, which were very connected to that area.
These native peoples, have you had a chance to interview any of them? Do they have an opinion of the Mothman? Do they acknowledge it?
You know, there's not much history that people today know about as far as the Shawnee. They kind of moved around a lot. Most of the Shawnee traditionalists can be found in Ohio, but their territory extended all the way up into Pennsylvania for quite a while.
As we move away from the 1966 and 67 incidents, and there are sightings that are starting to be reported in Chicago, when did those start, and are they continuing today?
Yeah, they, we became aware of them initially in 2011. When there were three sightings in the city of Chicago, most notably the first one, which was at 63rd and Pulaski Road, was the one where the photograph was taken of this winged being. And quite frankly, that photograph is probably the best one that anybody has gotten so far or that we know of. Then within that three-month period of these first three sightings, there was one in Miller Park in Chicago, and then a little bit later there was one in Washington Park, which is near the University of Chicago. So they were from August, September, and October, there were three different sightings. Then, the hoopla kind of died down. There were no real reported sightings at that time from 2011 to 2017. Though we did receive some later when the sighting started to pick up in 2017. But that area in and around Chicago, and I would say overall from southern Wisconsin south into Illinois into Indiana, and other areas around Lake Michigan are quite well known for winged entities and a lot of winged humanoids.
Is there any commonality, any similarities between the people that have reported these sightings? Is there any particular demographic or particular characteristics of those folks that you noticed?
No, they kind of run the gamut. I mean, we've had witnesses from areas that are quite poor or in the inner city, mm-hmm. out into the suburbs, into the high rises of Chicago, all around. I mean, even out into the countryside, it kind of spans the whole social economic level there.
So there's I was going to kind of move this towards a religious component. You don't know if these particular people were religious in any way, more than so than other people might be?
Yeah, some were more so than others. And in fact, we had one part of the city that had a lot of sightings, which is the Little Village area of Chicago. Mm-hmm. It's a large Hispanic neighborhood, and we had 8 sightings reported within that neighborhood. And it's a very religious Catholic population, and they were quite scared of what was going on, and in fact, most of them were calling it a black devil.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So their opinion then it was that it was somehow demonic or evil in some fashion.
Yeah, that's kind of, you know, with people that come from Latin America who emigrate into Chicago that and have had these encounters, that kind of that's the overall theme.
Are those folks more superstitious than maybe we would normally find?
You know, I would say so. But, you know, as far as it being a connection to what's really going on, you know, we really don't know. You
right,
know,
right.
We've got a lot of theories about why this thing is showing up, but we're just not really positive as of yet.
Lon's website, by the way, is phantomsandmonsters.com. He's got several books to his credit as well you're going to want to check out. Lon, short segment, but let's start talking about some of these theories that you have for why these creatures are appearing, particularly now.
Well, I guess the most popular theory is that these entities or these winged beings are coming through some type of portal of some type. Why? We don't know. I mean, the sightings seem to be very fleeting. They seem to come in and out of our reality very quickly. I have had 2 witnesses at 2 different times see these things fly into like an invisible doorway and just disappear. There have been people who have thought maybe there was some type of witchcraft involved that might have been summoned somehow. There have been other theories involving possible UFO activity and that these beings being involved with some type of extraterrestrials, as well as other theories to do with possible submerged type craft out in Lake Michigan and being connected to these beings. So there's just a lot of it. I mean, you know, I think there's got to be at least 20 theories that we've looked at and nothing really solid at this point, but I do believe that the interdimensional theory or this thing coming in and out of a portal. And these beings, I do believe, are corporeal. I think they are flesh and blood, but I do believe that they're coming from somewhere else.
Interdimensional and flesh and blood. That's an interesting combination.
Yeah, it is.
You theorized that the Mothman was something that may have been summoned by spiritual energy as a protector of Native American lands in the Point Pleasant area. Are you thinking the same thing for the Chicago sightings?
You know, it may be. You know, the Illinois has had a lot of winged entity sightings of various types that had been related to the indigenous First Nations people who lived there. I don't know if these beings are somehow connected or have they been summoned by them. I don't know. But why they're coming in and how they're coming in, that's just something we haven't been able to figure out. And believe me, we have looked everywhere. And, you know, and I've gone into so many different any type of research to try to get a little inkling of what this may actually be. But to this point, we just can't be sure what it is.
Well, I think, I mean, the only evidence we really have at this point is that people have sighted them. We haven't really seen them performing any activities. We haven't, I don't know if we've heard any sounds that one might make. We certainly haven't talked to one. And we have very little video or photographic evidence. So I imagine that's got to be a real difficult thing to do to try to determine what their reasoning is when you don't have much information to work with.
Yeah, some of the anecdotal evidence has been pretty strong. We've had police officers who have seen these things and reported it. We had a recent sighting in and around the O'Hara Airport area, Rosemont area, of a winged being accompanied by an alien gray and two female humanoids.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so, you know, that's something else we're looking into. That kind of took it out to another thread from this phenomenon. So we're, you know, and the witness themselves had like a Men in Black encounter after it occurred. I do believe something very profound did happen to her.
I'm going to urge you again tonight, make sure you go to YouTube, search for the channel. It's JV Johnson. It's very easy to find. Make sure you subscribe to that YouTube channel. There's a lot of great stuff there now, and there's a lot more on the way. And there's no fee or anything to subscribe. It's just, it's free. You just, I think you just need a YouTube account, but that's simple to do as well. And just subscribe. Again, YouTube, JV Johnson, very simple to find, and we want you to be part of that community. Tonight we're talking with Lon Strickler. Lon is a Fortean researcher. He's been researching winged humanoid creature sightings, particularly around Chicago. We're also going to talk about alien disclosure in tonight's conversation with Lon. Let's bring Lon back in. Lon, I'm going to go to the phone lines. We've had some people waiting here. And actually, anytime Barry from South Carolina calls, we put him to the front of the line. Barry, welcome to the program.
Hello there, JV. What a pleasure it is to speak to you and your guest.
Always good to hear from you, Barry.
No kidding. I've got to mention real quick, Lord of mercy, JV. Did you see where that Yankee got a 9-year contract for $324 million.
Yeah. It's crazy stuff, isn't it?
He's outside of our pay range.
Yeah. You know, it's one of the reasons I don't watch much baseball anymore, and it's sad because I used to really enjoy it, but it's the money's gotten in the way.
That's the thing, and the TV revenues is what's keeping the baseball teams alive because attendance is not real great.
No, you watch some of these games, you think they should be packed, and there's empty seats all over the place. It's really kind of sad. It really is sad. I don't know what else to say about it, but yeah. So what's on your mind, Barry?
Well, as a matter of fact, I was going to tell your guest, it's not a Mothman-type sighting, but I live about 2 hours from Mount Mitchell, North Carolina, which is the highest mountain east of South Dakota. And from about 5,000 feet up to 7,000 feet where the mountain is, I've talked to some park rangers up there on the Blue Ridge Parkway, and they say that a number of tourists and guests and a number of the game wardens and the park rangers and so forth, they've seen a creature that more resembles a bat, and it's not but as big as about a vulture, a great big buzzard. But they say that it is real menacing.
Oh, wow.
The people that have witnessed it. But anyway, I was just going to throw that out there and go there, and thanks for taking my call,
Barry.
You and Orion, and have a great Christmas and holiday season.
Don't hang up yet, Barry. Are you still there?
Okay.
Are these reports of this bat-type creature indicate that it's humanoid?
Well, the thing about it is the bat is the only mammal that can fly, basically. They're the closest related flying creature to human beings.
Right.
They actually have a skin, a membrane in between the bones, and talking about none of these descriptions I heard from the park rangers or anything had glowing red eyes or whatever, but the face and head really resembled more a bat than a human.
Interesting. Thanks for sharing that with us, Barry. Lon, have you heard about this report?
Well, not that particularly, but in Chicago, most of the sightings are bat-winged creatures.
Oh, okay.
They're described as bat-wing gargoyles. Some people will say they look like the creature from Jeepers Creepers. We get that description all the time. But overall, the body and the wings themselves, they're a thin, emaciated type body, anywhere from 5 to 7 foot in height. The wings are bat-like with the membrane, which have a wingspan up to 10 to 15 foot, and it's got a smaller head, and many of them had the red eyes. So, yeah, the batwing gargoyle-type features are what's mostly being seen in Chicago.
So Barry said that the reports in South Carolina say this creature is about the size of a vulture. So I guess this one would be a little bit smaller than what's been reported in Chicago.
Well, we have gotten reports of smaller ones. In fact, we had one recently. Someone said it was about the size of a large dog that they saw scampering across the road with its wings. But there have been a few. I guess these things can be juvenile as well.
Lon, you say that you've done a lot of research in trying to determine what they are, where they're coming from, and all that. I mean, again, going back to this idea of researching, you know, your resources are probably pretty slim. Where do you do most of your research to try to determine or get some answers to these questions?
I basically rely on the people, the experiencers who are seeing these things, and talking them directly. That's where most of the information has come from. There's not a lot of historical information available. It's you know, since the advent of the internet, it's become more available, but it's mostly geared to the Mothman incident in Point Pleasant. But the information we're getting is coming directly from the witnesses.
You mentioned some sightings, or at least one, near O'Hare Airport in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any corroborating reports from radar operators or anything indicating that some type of blip is showing up on radar that might correspond with some of these sightings?
Well, that's one of the things I'm in process of getting now. I've been working on getting FOIA reports put out. We've had a rash of sightings around the airport and in the airport since the beginning of October of this year. We've actually had five sightings around Rosemont, which is northeast of the airport, and then three sightings in the cargo areas in the actual airport itself. And in fact, we had a TSA official, report one of these as well about 2 weeks ago.
With all of these sightings, as you look into them and you talk to eyewitnesses, do you believe there's multiple creatures being seen, or do you think it's the same one showing up in different places?
In the beginning, I thought there were probably at least three of these things, and that's talking about in 2017. I believe now there are certain individuals in certain areas, but I'm quite sure there's more than one.
I guess if there's a disparity in size, you know, between reports too, that you'd have to assume that it's not the same creature in every instance.
It's mostly characteristics, the way they make themselves shown to people, you know, and also in region, because we do have sightings as far north as Milwaukee. So we're getting sightings in Wisconsin and in Illinois and occasionally down in Indiana.
All right, let's go back to our phone lines. Another welcome caller, Fred from Charlotte, North Carolina. Hey, Fred, welcome to the show.
Great show, JV, as always.
Thank you very much. Always good to hear from you, Fred.
I just got a quick comment. He talked about that it had chased some people on some particular road up there in West Virginia or somewhere.
That's right.
And there was a story a few years back, a girl, I don't know, maybe 18 or something, up towards the mountains of North Carolina. She was in her car and going along the road, and she looked up, and something caught her eye, and there was a huge Mothman up in the tree, she said. Well, the family made fun of her for years, 4 or 5 years. So one morning, her brother picked her up. They're going to work real early, like this time of year. It was still dark. And they're going along the same road, and there's this somebody standing beside the road, thought it was somebody with a raincoat at first, and he had her stop the car, which may not have been wise, and he got out with a flashlight, started walking towards it a little bit, and then saw the red eye, ran back in the car, and they kind of took off, and it went up, and they claim that it came down on top of the car, you know, or the station wagon or whatever, and hit the top, and they even had scratch marks. And he told her that everybody thought she was so crazy. He said, "Don't you tell anyone."
Oh, wow.
You know, what we just saw, supposedly. So anyway, that's the only thing I've heard about that in our area.
Fred, when was that? When did that happen?
Oh, I'd say a handful of years ago.
So, you know, relatively recently. We're not talking about back in the 60s or anything.
No. Yeah, it was not that long ago. It was maybe 8 or 10 years, something like that.
Was this a report you read about somewhere in the media, or do you know these people?
No, I don't know them. I just heard about it from somebody.
And first
I'd ever heard of a Mothman, because I didn't know anything about it like y'all do. And then after that story, I started hearing some stuff about it. And, of course, on these shows, y'all are starting, you've been talking about it some, so I realized, well, there really might be a Mothman everywhere here at times.
Yeah, have you heard any other reports from other sources since that particular one?
Nope, that's it.
Interesting.
That's the only one.
Well,
yeah.
Fred, thanks for sharing that with us. I appreciate it.
Two different times.
Right, of course, yeah. Thanks for bringing that to our attention. Again, Lon, something that you've heard of? Did you hear about that account?
Well, you know, I do have family in the Smoky Mountains and around Roan Mountain and around that area. And, you know, I've heard a lot of things over the years. And to be quite honest with you, a winged humanoid-type being wouldn't surprise me. It really wouldn't. You know, there are areas in the country where these have been seen in bunches. In particular, around the same time this was going on in Chicago, I had three sightings of a similar type being in Pasco County, Florida, which is not too far from Tampa. So, we've had some down in Texas, had some just east of Cleveland. And, of course, here in Pennsylvania, there's been a scattered number of sightings for years. So, as well as up into Canada, we had a lot of sightings up in southern Ontario. So this is something that is kind of nationwide, but it does seem to congregate in certain areas.
I want to go back to something that you mentioned earlier in our discussion, Lon. You talked about the Chernobyl sighting and the Fukushima sighting. Obviously, both very, very catastrophic nuclear disasters, one in Ukraine and the other one in Japan. Tell us a little bit about those sightings. Was there anything unique about those?
Well, the sighting in Chernobyl, some of the people that lived in the town nearest the nuclear plant occasionally had mentioned, and there was some record of it, of this black, large winged being that was seen circling above the power plant. Now, you know, I don't know what they thought of it other than being a huge bird-like being. But, of course, when the disaster happened, people started mentioning it more and more, and it became part of the vernacular as far as with the related to the disaster. And, of course, some people kind of tied it into what happened at Point Pleasant. As far as Fukushima, it was kind of after the fact there. Nobody had mentioned anything about seeing any winged being until after the nuclear disaster. Then some people came forward and said, oh, yeah, we saw these angel-like beings, angel-like entities flying and sitting on top of the nuclear plant. So, you know, I don't know how much of that is actual, you know, something that people actually saw. Though I can't find any references of sightings before the disaster.
So the Chernobyl reports came prior to the disaster. The Fukushima reports kind of came after the fact, although some people then came forward and said, oh, yeah, by the way, I did see something before this happened.
Exactly.
That makes it a little less credible, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, I don't find it credible.
At all?
No. Nah.
Okay. And I also heard you use a word that I hadn't heard in any of the other descriptions, angelic. Does anybody else use that description of any?
Not
of these?
Necessarily. I haven't heard any of the recent sightings that we've been working with as being angelic. Though there was a particular sighting near Ottawa, about a decade ago, they called the Ottawa Angel. And this thing was pretty huge. I mean, I'm talking about, some people described it being as big as 15 foot in height.
Oh, wow.
And they said it looked like an angel. And, you know, I have read the reports. I think the guy who wrote it was very credible. He even did some sketches of it. Now, what he saw, I have no idea. But there was something that was seen, and there was another large winged humanoid seen in the Niagara area of New York not long after that. So, and that was pretty big as well, because the two witnesses happened to see it while they were driving on an interstate. So, you know, they kind of described the same thing. So what they saw, I have no idea.
Are the sightings of these winged humanoid creatures cyclical in any way? Is there any pattern to them?
Not really. I mean, I've had witnesses that have seen them flying, standing, you know, in all types of situations. I mean, you know, it's nothing. The only thing that's common for the most part is the body style, the wings, and occasionally the eyes. But all the sightings are fairly fleeting sightings. Most of them are at nighttime. We will have an occasional daylight sighting, but they're very fleeting. They're very quick.
And there's no pattern to the appearances, like they don't come every 7 years in a cluster and then kind of disappear for a while. There's nothing like that.
Not that I know of, no.
It just seems completely random.
Yeah.
Interesting. Now, you've written all about this in your book, Mothman Dynasty, right?
Yeah, and I'm actually working on a follow-up now.
When's the follow-up going to be published?
Don't know. I'm trying to get it out in the spring, maybe.
All right, well, you've also, your most recent book, which was actually released in May of this year, is called Alien Disclosure, Experiencers Expose Reality. Tell us about that one.
Well, I have been involved with the alien abduction, alien contactee phenomena for a long time now. I'd say almost 25 years. And I've worked with a lot of people who have claimed to have had experiences and abductions and have gone through a lot of personal experiences and have contacted me and, you know, talked to me about it. In particular, I had one gentleman by the name of David Eckhart, who I've been associated with for over a decade now, who still has encounters in his home. These don't have anything to do with craft. They come through a portal, and he and his family had been abducted quite early for up to 2 to 3 times a week. And in fact, he was actually cured of a very bad arthritic condition by these alien beings. But he's not the only one. I have worked with other people who have had harrowing experiences, to be quite honest. And in fact, I did become involved with a woman and her mother who had some experiences in a home, and she vanished, the girl.
She just disappeared?
Yeah, she was abducted, I believe. And there hasn't been a trace of her for almost 10 years now.
Oh, wow. Yeah. The gentleman, I didn't catch his name completely, that you say you've been working with for a long time. Eckhart, was it?
David Eckhart. Yeah.
Eckhart. You say he's still being visited in his home.
Oh, yeah.
Have you been able to be present when any of that's happened?
I haven't been down there, but there have been other researchers. And, in fact, the Fact and Fake Paranormal Files did a segment, an episode on his phenomena. And they were not able to disprove what's going on there, which is quite unusual. They experienced a lot of strange phenomena as well.
So what's the phenomena? Other than being visited, what are the other signs of this visitation?
Well, the one that they noticed the most and I had known about was they had set their van outside the house, and they had someone inside the house and actually another person up in the tree looking through the window watching David as he was in the bedroom. And now all these nighttime encounters happened in the bedroom. David said there would be a portal that would open up. Well, he had told me that one thing that he did notice when he would have his encounters was that the next day he would come outside and his lawn and his driveway and sidewalks would be covered with earthworms. Apparently, there's an electrical charge created by these beings coming into his home, and he'd had to go out there every morning literally with a hose and wash them down onto the street to the chagrin of the neighbors. And, you know, so when they were actually taping the episode, the guys were in the van. Ben Hansen, who was the head guy with the Paranormal Files, they started having electrical problems all of a sudden, and David said they're here, or something to that effect. He also said I heard piano music too, and that did happen occasionally. So anyway, when the electricity came back on, they came out of the truck. And when they walked onto the grass into, you know, on off the street, it was literally covered in earthworms.
Well, you've looked at other people and other encounters. Do you focus primarily on abduction or visitation scenarios?
Mostly, yeah, I do. And it's something where I don't necessarily go out looking for these encounters. They come to me.
The people find you to tell you their story?
Yeah.
Why is that? Because you've just been, your reputation as an investigator and researcher?
Maybe, but there are a lot of factors involved there. And one of them is that most people usually contact MUFON or another reporting agency first.
Right.
And unfortunately, they don't get many answers, let alone cooperation, and then they just get tired of it and then come play someplace else. And I usually end up getting called, and that's what happened with David. And it's happened to others as well.
Let's try to squeeze in one more listener call. This is TJ from Rhode Island, another great caller. Hey, TJ, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for the welcome, and I have a question for your guest regarding the intersection of the phenomenon with anything else like these Mothman ones or any of the others he studied. Because one thing about the old X-Files that I found interesting was the way they entwined appearances from dead people relative to aliens and relative to all of these other things. And is there any intersection where things can say, you can see a pattern immediately preceding, say, a Mothman-type sighting or immediately following? And I mean really general, like anything from poltergeist to UFO activity, either before or after.
Great question, TJ. I know that in Point Pleasant, you know, we had talked about Men in Black and other alien-type activity that seemed to precede Mothman. But what do you think, Lon? Is there anything like that?
Well, Point Pleasant, usually the Men in Black phenomena usually came after most of the sightings. But as far as what I have been investigating with these current sightings, there really hasn't been much intersection with other type of phenomena, which we thought was quite unusual. We thought maybe there'd be UFO activity that would increase, and in fact, it actually decreased in that area because Chicago's well known for UFO activity, so that's one thing we thought was quite strange. But I'll tell you, I do believe most phenomena or paranormal phenomena is connected. You know, people
but
have
you feel
about
this one is pretty much a standalone type of event.
Well, I think as far as the winged humanoids, it may be. But then again, you know, I have seen instances, investigated instances, just like with Bigfoot or other type of cryptids being associated with UFO activity and extraterrestrial activity. I think there are connections in many instances.
Okay. All right. Like I said, I was pretty broad on the entire question regarding anything from poltergeist to hauntings to I don't know what else you could throw in there, but anything that would form a pattern that you could see.
Well, like I said, so far we haven't seen a pattern, but I'm not saying that there isn't something there.
Okay. All right. I appreciate it. And a very Merry Christmas to you, since I don't think you'll be on between. Oh, hello.
You're still there, TJ. Hey, did I read this correctly? You have got a birthday coming up?
Yes, I do.
Happy birthday,
I do.
Sir.
Do I get a birthday shout out for a good friend of the show?
Sure.
Okay.
You absolutely do. Want me to do it right now?
Yeah, it's Sunday. It's Sunday. That's why I remember your friend Cindy, was it, who was the actress and told me it's like being born at this time of the year is tragic because you're born skeptical.
That's right. That's right. TJ, thanks for calling. Happy birthday. Have a great weekend, my friend. And we probably won't talk to you, so have a Merry Christmas as well.
Oh, same to you and yours.
Okay. I did want to follow up on TJ's question, though, Lon. You know, poltergeist activity and spirit-type paranormal activity. You mentioned spirit activity going on in Point Pleasant where you thought right. There may be a summoning connection. So I guess there is a little bit of that somewhere.
Yeah, it can be. I mean, that is just a theory of mine because of all the activity that we have seen happen in that same area as the sightings. But that's just really a theory of mine. I'm not saying that it doesn't occur, but like I said, as far as actual proof goes, it could be, but then we're not really sure.
I want to go back to talking about these abduction cases. There's a lot of high-profile cases. Which of the, maybe it's not even a high-profile case, but which case most impresses you? Which ones do you really look to as being the standard bearer for this type of phenomenon?
Well, I mean, I guess the original, which is the first one I ever heard of when I was a kid, was the Betty and Barney
Hill. Yeah.
Yeah, their abduction in New Hampshire. There were so many facets to that as far as what they experienced and how they reacted and some of the details they were given and, you know, what occurred when they went under hypnosis. It was just a lot to it. And, maybe the most famous and earliest actual investigation as far as an experiencer or an abduction. But quite frankly, it had so many things to it that I think it's one of the most interesting.
I think so, too. And one of the things that makes it so interesting is that Betty and Barney Hill didn't stand to gain anything by coming forward with this story. In fact, it seems like it actually may have been more of a burden to them to come forward with the story.
Well, since they were an interracial couple at that time, yeah, I absolutely agree with you. They had nothing to gain from it.
And then, of course, there's the Travis Walton case.
Yeah.
Which is another high-profile case. Did you look into that one at all?
I have, I like Travis. I've talked to Travis in the past. I don't necessarily buy into the whole scenario.
Interesting. Okay.
Of course, you know, they made a movie about it, and a lot of that was embellished. But when you actually go and read his account, you know, there are a lot of things in that account that, you know, are hard to prove. And, of course, you know, a lot of us are skeptic to a degree. I do have questions, but, you know, I don't discount him, really. I mean, it seems that he was under a lot of stress during the time. And, it's an interesting story. It could have very well happened, but, you know, when it comes to abductions, I get a little more skeptical than normal.
The interesting part of Travis Walton's story is that he had several witnesses who all passed polygraph tests. And,
right.
You know, it's one thing to have one or two people pass the polygraph test, but I think it was like five or six of them actually did. And you'd think that if it was a fabricated story, someone would have cracked under that test. Not that they're foolproof by any means.
Yeah, I mean, like, there was a lot of information that it was very interesting and could have actually happened. But, you know, I always had that little thing in the back of my head that was saying, you got to look at this with a more discerning viewpoint.
Right. Well, you got to approach all of these instances with a bit of skepticism. Otherwise, we'll just be fooled by everything. So that's an important tact to take. Lon, we're basically out of time here. What are you working on next, and where can people find more information about your books and your other work?
Well, I'm working on a flying cryptid book, and I will be putting the the later sightings of the Chicago phenomena in there. But I'm also going to be covering other flying being and flying cryptid cases that I've been involved with and people have reported to me. So that book should be coming out sometime in early next year. Like I said, my website is phantomsandmonsters.com. If you have a report, you can just go there and click the button and get my email, or you can actually call me. My number is there as well. I have a radio show, Arcane Radio, which can be found on ParanormalKing.com. We do that live every Friday night, and we have a podcast as well. And I'm involved with a lot of different stuff. I've got my Phantoms and Monsters 14 research team. We have 18 individuals who have been working with me over the years, and we're trying to find the truth. That's basically what, you know, if we didn't like what we were doing, we wouldn't be doing it.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat, Lon, so I can appreciate what you're saying there. Thanks so much for being here tonight. I hope you have a great Christmas, and I'm looking forward to having you back on the show when we can get you back on.
Well, same to you, and thanks for having me.
For those of you who haven't visited our YouTube stream, the live stream of the program on YouTube, during the breaks, we offer some nostalgia and various trivia and kind of a look back at some old television programs, commercials, whatever. Like, and sometimes YouTube doesn't like it, so we apologize to all those that we made, to all the toes we've stepped on. Anyway, thanks to Lon Strickler for being with us tonight. I hope everybody has a great weekend, especially if it's the opportunity you'll have to celebrate Christmas and holidays with friends and family. A lot of people will do that over the weekend, travel, whatever it happens to be. Be safe. And enjoy your time with your loved ones. It's Beyond Reality Radio.
Beyond Reality Radio is hosted by Jason Hawes and J.V. Johnson and produced by Alexandria Johnson and Slick Eddie Edwards for Entercom Radio. Beyond Reality Radio is distributed by Westwood One Radio Networks. Stop by our Facebook page and say hello. Follow the hosts on Facebook as well. For Jason Hawes, follow at jasonhawes.taps. For J.V. Johnson, follow at jvjparanormal. If you'd like to be a guest on Beyond Reality Radio or you have a suggestion for a guest, contact Slick Eddie Edwards at slickeddieedwards@gmail.com. Be sure to visit our chat room as well at beyondrealityradio.com. Thanks for listening.